Hey, it's Sam Alai here, founder of My Legal Academy, where we help lawyers scale and automate their law firms so they could sign up more clients and reclaim their precious time. If you're looking to grow your practice while working less, click the link in the show notes to book a free call to discover a radically different way to grow your law firm. Enjoy the episode.
Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 426 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Yul Tyra, your host, as always, from the East Coast, joined by my good buddy out there on the left coast, Sam Alai. Sam, how's it going out there in sunny Hollywood?
Doing well. Excited to share some good value with our audience. Our audience, Neil, has picked up. It's been very consistent. It's been growing. We appreciate you for listening in. Both me and Neil are here to serve. So we appreciate you being with us. Getting the most out of this as possible.
Absolutely, for sure. And it's always nice to see the size of the audience growing. If you're finding value in what we have to offer here, please do share it with at least one person, if not more. And we'd love to reach as many folks as we can.
Yeah, we're here to change lives. So today's topic is definitely life-changing, and that is personal finance. Personal finance, everybody needs to make money. But Neil, there's one game to make money. It's another game to keep money. Today, we're going to be talking about the second part, how to make your money and how to maintain it, how to grow it, and how to make sure to set up a future for you and, more importantly, your family. So, Neil, let's start off with the first point. Let's first set up the foundation. Why is this important? Neil, do you have some thoughts about why? Personal finance, anything about that before we get into it?
Well, yeah, I tell you that from my own personal experience that having your finger on your own financial growth is the key to being able to understand where you have to spend your time and energy with respect to growing your law firm. You know, if you're not clear of where you stand personally, then you have no real focus down the road for where you want your law firm to go. They're intertwined. And so it's really important that you keep that in mind. And frankly, I will tell you that the horror stories that I've seen over the years with attorneys who get in trouble financially is largely because they don't know what's going on. They're not aware. They're riding by the seat of their pants, so to speak. And that's not the way to run a business. It's not a way to run your financial situation. So I think this is exactly the right thing.
Yeah. And the goal is, you know, that you shouldn't need to work for the rest of your life. Neil, in the past year, I heard so many people that are still grinding it later on. It's by all means, you know, everybody should work because it gives you purpose and meaning to life. But if you're always consistently working and you still don't have anything saved up, it's just a rat race. So let's share five important points. You're looking to manage your personal finance. These are found to be crucial. Neil, the last 4 or 5 years, I kind of started delving deep into personal finance, and everything I'm about to share comes from that experience. Let's start off with the most important point. Number one is whatever you want to grow, you got to track. So whatever you track grows. So how do we track personal finance? Neil, what I've found, tracking everything in a Google Sheet is key. Essentially, it's a personal finance Google Sheet that lays out everything about your personal finance. I have mine opened up right now, so I'll be sharing the tabs. I'll share the tabs that I think that are crucial. So as you guys are listening in, quickly take these notes because these are the things eventually you want to be keeping track. Number one is your accounts. Pretty much across your cash accounts, your personal checking accounts, your business checking accounts, your auto accounts, your stocks, your real estate, and any kind of accounts that you have. Well, one is, Neil, I think you could say a lot about this. You're an estate planning lawyer. Why is that important for you to have that in writing? If you don't mind sharing some of that.
Well, one of the things that's really difficult from an estate administration standpoint is that, you know, once you pass, if your family doesn't know where the assets are and how to access them, it's an enormous hassle. And when you hear people say, well, you want to avoid probate at all costs because it's time consuming and expensive. It's time consuming and expensive if you don't set your family up for success. And if you, in essence, hide the ball by not having it clearly designated where your accounts are, what they are, what they hold, and how they can be accessed, you just set your family up for disaster.
Yeah, your family and your spouse need to know where your money is, because if, God forbid, something happens, right? It's crucial so that, you know, those accounts are not lost. So on this particular tab, we want to keep track of the category, whether it be cash, business, stocks, real estate, whatever that is. Then you want to keep the name of, you know, the type of account that is, from what bank, the amount. Also keep track of the date, when would the number was last updated, and also any notes, and also links to any statements or tax records. It makes it very easy when it's tax season to be able to pull out, you know, those particular, just quickly go to the sheet, go to those links and pull those out. The other tabs that I keep track of is stocks. Yes, it's amazing if you have Schwab or Robinhood and you have stuff there, but I found that when you have it in one central place in your Google Sheet, where you can see what stocks you hold, the quantities, the values, your cost basis, your cost per share, your gains per loss, everything in one place, so that you're always clear on exactly what's going on with all your stocks, it serves you better. Other things, potentially your crypto, your credit cards, your real estate, also a list of your debts. Very good to have a sense of which debts do you have, what's your interest rates that you're paying for those debts. So that way, you know that, let's just say, you know, have some that are 4%, some that are 7%. So maybe it would be a good goal of mine will be to clear out the 7% interest rate debts first, and then go down and try to get eliminate those. Also, if you have particular domains, also your personal expenses. I just have a tab just for all your my monthly expenses, which could include your Amazon, you know, purchases, your insurance, clothing, electricity bills, gas, gifts, grocery stores, gym memberships, healthcare, insurance for your car, insurance for property insurance, home mortgage, home property tax, internet, loan payments, restaurants, subscriptions, tuitions, whatever that is. So that way, you know what your monthly burn is. And that might be actually probably the most crucial thing to know, Neil, is the ultimate goal, I think, for wealth is you got to figure out what that is, first of all. So a lot of people do the monetary number, whether it be, usually it's like a round number. Usually it's $1 million, $5 million, or $10 million. I found that's a moving target, and it doesn't satisfy you. It's like a very rudimentary kind of goal. But I found, Neil, an even better goal is to have your passive incomes or your investments to cover your monthly expenses. And that's what I consider as when you have entered the wealthy category. So that means, let's just say you have stocks or rental properties. Let's just say that bring you, let's just say $10,000 a month. Well, if your monthly expenses are $8,000 a month, I consider that as you're wealthy, because your passive sources is now covering your burn, your churn, however much your expenses are. So, well, how would you be able to plan for that? Well, you need to know what your churn is. You need to know how much you're burning every month so that you know what it takes for you to be able to cover that. So that's a pretty good thing to keep track of. Other things is your kids' tuition. How much have you invested so far? How much are you need to invest in the next, you know, 10, 15 years? Anything with your house, you know, keeping track of your down payments, your mortgages, your property tax, your home insurance, and your maintenance costs. Knowing that with clarity, which again contributes to what your personal expenses are. Also, 30-year mortgage calculators gives you a good idea of, like, you know, what, how long does it take for me to clear out this mortgage, or, you know, where I am with that. And those are pretty much a good grasp of pretty much what you need to keep. And then ultimately, Neil, I think the best tab that I have in this whole thing is an asset allocation. So the very first tab, it was this accounts tab, which again categorizes all the different types and all the different things that you have. Well, you're able to create a quick little pivot table that it tells you exactly for all the different asset allocations, how much cash do you have? How much money do you have in your business accounts? How much money do you have, you know, invested into real estate? And ultimately, you want to have an asset allocation pie chart that shows how you're diversified. And you usually want to see, ideally, a mix of all these different things. So you have a mix of real estate, business, cash, you know, things like that, so that you're a well-rounded kind of personal finance. Those are the things that I think are crucial. Again, start off very simple Google Sheets, just from what I just shared. At least, the very least, start off with your accounts tab. Then second one would be hobby. And most important would be your expenses, your monthly expenses. Start from there and little by little add on to this Google Sheet. And then once you become kind of clear on everything that's going on, then you'll see that you're able to manage it better, you know, lower things, increase things, and kind of manage it from there.
Yeah, I would also suggest that, you know, one of the reasons that people kind of hold back on doing this is that they say, well, geez, it's a lot of work. I mean, I don't know how I can spend the time gathering all this data and putting it in a presentable format when I got, you know, a business to run and a family to deal with. I would highly suggest you also look into the role that automation can play here. If for nothing else, you know, make sure that you're getting your statements online, and then you can set up a number of different rules and a number of different resources for how to sort those online statements, put them in the right folder, name them appropriately so that they can be recalled quickly. You can even get to the point where you can have that online statement parsed and the number entered into your Google spreadsheet. So you can take advantage of automation to assist you with that. In Lawyers Club, there's plenty of information about using automated tools to extract data and have it placed on the Google spreadsheet. That's a good place to start. I'd also recommend a gentleman who many people know, Max Sparky, David Sparks, who's a former attorney and host of the Mac Power Users podcast. He wrote a whole user's guide about how to do exactly this type of automation, exactly with financial data. And that's another good place to start. Two good resources for getting a handle on accumulating your financial data so that you can see it in a glance.
And Neil, once you build the rhythm and you start building out the Google Sheet or using these softwares, it's actually fun that it's actually fun, kind of amusing, you know, especially for math nerds. This is kind of, once you get clarity, then you start becoming maybe more detail oriented and you start getting more data, and, you know, it's kind of turns into a fun little venture. Let's go to point number two, mastering personal finance. Neil, I found one of the top mistakes a lot of people who don't have a mastered the personal finance is doing too much, investing too many different things. I mean, I'm looking at, you know, sometimes I get screenshots of my friends' investments and I'm like horrified. I'm like, why do you have so many different things? How are you going to stay on top of these things? How are you going to know when the trend turns, you know, when to sell? It's very, you know, it's very easy to buy, but the game, name of the game is, you know, when to sell. So what you want to do is to concentrate more than diversify. Concentration is actually the word. Diversification is only if you're trying to protect, you know, if you got a lot going on, then okay, at that point you could diversify across multiple categories to be able to protect the downside. But for most people, 90% of people, I would say concentration is the way to build actual wealth, and also allows you to focus on those key investments so that you can learn it even on a deeper level. The deeper you go on learning about a particular asset or investment, then you'll to get the competitive advantage over the rest of the market. So downsize your portfolio, look at your portfolio, ask yourself, would I buy this, whatever I'm holding right now at this price right now? If it's not, then I would say it's probably before the end of the year is probably a good time to kind of do a cleaning of the house, you know, sort it out. Usually, Neil, the magical number is like max 3 is like the magical number, ideally 1, not 2, but max 3 is the way to be. And that's what I try to do. Let's just say when it comes to stocks, for the most part, 90% of my investments are either in the top 1 or top 2 or whatever I think that is. Same thing with crypto. And I try to, again, try to concentrate versus diversifying.
When I was younger and this was starting to hit home for me, I had a pretty simple investment strategy, and it was, where is my wife spending money? And, you know, because she was a typical consumer. And so I looked at, we were spending money on Apple products, Apple stock. We were spending money at Whole Foods and Amazon. So Amazon stock, you know, was getting coffee every morning from Starbucks. You know, my kids were eating every afternoon from Chipotle. And right there, there's four of the top five stocks that I had that did me very well and continue to serve me well. Okay. So it can be as simple as that. And your point about investing in something that you can wrap your head around and can find interesting, that's why I like Amazon, Apple, Starbucks, Chipotle, because I knew exactly what they were and I could see firsthand how they were running their business. And that made it interesting. That made it fun. It made me want to learn more about how their businesses were run and what they're doing. And, you know, if I want, one other thing that you, that often you can do is, if you're not ready to step up that kind of level of understanding or research, is simply, if you want to take advantage of the market, an indexed fund, a fund that tracks broad indexes like the S&P 500 or the Dow. And look, I'm not a financial guy, so take this for what it's worth. But you don't have to be a genius to see that trend over the last, take it however many years you want to take it, 5, 10, 20, 50 years, that line has gone up consistently, regardless of who's in office, regardless of what's going on around the world, that number has gone up. So if you want to just invest in an index fund that tracks that same pathway, it takes a lot of the guesswork out and you save money, might not have to pay brokerage fees and the like. So again, I'm not a financial guy, but those two premises have served me well. I'm an old guy, so I've seen it a lot. So,
yeah. And you brought up some names of some companies, which leads us to point number three, which is invest for the long term. Don't trade. Neil, we're in the generation right now where people have access to a very popular app called Robinhood.
Yeah.
Which basically makes it, it puts stock trading and crypto trading in people's pockets, and they also gamify it. So they make it, you know, crazy fun animations with sounds and rewards and incentives and all these things. And you realize it with notifications every time something happens. And I know, because I am exposed to this younger generation, they're hooked on it and they think they figured it out. And what all these platforms, and especially Robinhood, is doing is trying to increase the volatility in the market, because they make money when the markets go up and when the markets go down, because they make money from the trades. So they want people to trade as much as possible. Well, every time that you trade, number one is you're giving a good chunk to Mr. Robinhood. Second is, people think that they're smart, but in reality is the market is meant to make you lose money. I mean, there's institutional investors, there's bots, there's AI bots these days that are backed by billions and trillions of dollars. You're going up against these guys. So, you know, you come in trying to trade against the system, 90% of traders lose. So trading in gist is a losing game. You know, trying to time, oh, when it's this point, I should sell, at this point, I should buy, and doing this stuff is a losing strategy. Instead, easy game is to just buy and wait and just wait. Years, maybe even decades, is the easy way to go. And that really sets you apart from people that are going to be generationally wealthy and do something with their investments that's actually going to help them and their family, versus people that can just get burnt and end up losing a lot of money and then never come back to doing it again. And they, not just that, they miss out on the opportunity to actually be able to do, you know, gain some real wealth from this. So warning to my traders, don't. You're going to get burnt. Play the easy game.
Yeah, I always liken it to betting against or trying to beat Vegas. Okay? Vegas and the casinos make money because they know what the hell they're doing. right down to the micro penny. And unless you're willing to invest that kind of time and money and effort, you can't compete. The house is always going to win. And frankly, look, the market is not that different. The market is not that different. If you think you can beat it by burning and churning and turnover and timing, it's just the quickest way to financial ruin. Look at the people who have generational wealth. What is a consistent pattern of theirs? Buy and hold. Buy and hold. Buy and hold.
Very simple formula, right? Just buy and hold. That's it.
The challenge comes is when you buy and you're holding it and it's going up and then you hit a rough patch personally. Your inclination is, ooh, I'm going to sell this now because I need the money. And then you start this pattern where you start chasing the money trail. And now you're in a game of volatility and trying to time things. And it's never going to work.
And that usually happens when one of the first rules of investment is broken, which is don't invest anything that you're not willing to lose. A lot of people I've seen do that, invest things that they need that money. You should not be investing anything that you need for the next couple of years. Be very
careful. And again, it's no different than going to Vegas. Don't go to Vegas and bet money that you're not willing to lose.
Yep, you will get burnt. Let's go to point number four, is investing heavily in learning before you take the leap. I guess so. You have to. It's required. You have to go to school before you take the final exam. And the final exam is investing. A lot of people just jump the gun. And it's usually based on what my friend said or what my friend posted and my friend told me and all this stuff. Losing strategy. You have to invest enough time to learn from different angles, different teachers, different perspectives, different things from all sides. Go deep into it. Months, ideally years into it before you start putting your hard-earned money that took you, you know, some time to earn. And then all of a sudden, because of one bad decision, you ended up losing it. And please be careful not to just follow what other people post and talk about and do, because they've done their research, you know, and there's nuances in this. Maybe their timing is different from when they're sharing it also. So you have to put in your own, you have to do your own homework. Neil, I could share my favorite resource for investments and personal finance is a YouTube channel called Invest Answers. This is a guy who 40 years ago, he got into investing and became really successful. And he's like the most analytical guy in the world that I've ever seen. He breaks things into Google Sheets and crazy amount of data, crazy amount of analysis. And then he comes and summarizes all those findings in a very succinct, clear way. And I've been a follower of his daily videos for the past 4 or 5 years, every single day. He hasn't missed a video in the past 4 or 5 years, which is amazing. On an average, between 30 minutes to 60 minutes a day. And that kind of education compounds over time, where you kind of understand the flow, the nuances of investing. You know, 4 years into learning it deeply is very different from even one episode or maybe even a couple of weeks of that. So make sure to invest enough time learning before you take the leap.
There's a lot to be said for that. There's a lot of resources out there. I always tend to lean more towards the written word financial books because most frequently they pass the test of time and they're also been vetted by editors. So I tend to lean more towards reading about financial management in hard form.
And let's talk about the sources too. If you're happen to be following mainstream sources like Forbes and MSNBC and these things, it's usually that's the market dictating what you're learning, which is at that point, it's already too late. It's kind of very reactionary kind of articles. What you want to do, the secret sauce is follow and learn from futurists. Like these are like personal people that are actually successful and have been in it for decades. They're sharing these things publicly, usually on X or on their YouTube channels, usually one of two sources, X or YouTube. And they're consistently putting out really good, very fresh updates of what's going on to the market. Versus the mainstream markets, those, it's too late. Like if anything, those are like the anti triggers. Like whatever they're saying, it's usually the opposite. And I always get Neil, I get texted those articles. It's like, what do you think about this? I'm like, no, I don't agree at all. They're just trying to, you know, they're trying to sell you a headline. And I, especially when I read the headline and it's like, has so many buzzwords squished in there. I'm like, there's only one reason they wrote that article is to try to squeeze as many of those buzzwords in there to get as many views as possible so they can make money on the back end for an advertisement. No way, Jose, I'm not reading that. Like, no matter whatever it says. So be very careful of your sources. Just expect 90% of sources are trash. Be very particular, but learn from futurists is a good secret sauce from freaking like what's going on in the market. Let's go to point number 5, which is resisting the urge to FOMO, fear of missing out. Neil, this week was peak FOMO. So far, we got more FOMO to come in the next couple of months than we've ever seen in the market in the past couple of years. And that's, you know, keeping it very up to date with the election that happened. I knew there was going to be a lot of volatility after the election. And that ended up being so true by a factor of 10x. Crazy amount of volatility. So that means a lot of people all of a sudden just woke up to investing and crypto and stocks and all this stuff. And I've sensed peak FOMO, fear of missing out, in the past week. And usually FOMO does not lead to good results. So if you ever feel that you're missing out on something, the best thing you can do is to not do anything. Do not be reactionary. Do not be emotional. Just sit on your hands. When things are going flying high is the wrong time to be thinking about getting in, making trades, doing that stuff. Just wait until things simmer down. Okay? So be very cognizant. And then I share this because I know in the next couple of months, next 6 months, things are going to get bonanza. they're going to go crazy. So please be very cognizant of this FOMO time. And the best thing you can do probably is not do anything at all and just let things simmer down. And when markets are quiet and they're oversold or when people are not really paying attention to it is the time that you should be actually paying the most attention to it.
Yeah, it's another aspect of, you know, trying to time the market. You know, feel like you're missing out. You probably are. You missed the opportunity. And rather than chase it, you should be sitting back and strategizing and wondering, what's my next opportunity? Not how can I jump on this one that I think I might have missed and I want to jump in late, but what's the next one that I can jump in early with?
Yeah, so in the last 30 minutes, we try to give you the gist of how to master personal finance. And I think we really give you the top 5 pointers. Number 1 is whatever you track grows. So start tracking everything to the dollar in a Google Sheet, so you know exactly where the money's coming in and where the money's leaving. And from there, you'll figure out the patterns and things that are going on. And ultimately, you want to make sure to have a good view on pretty much your asset allocations, your accounts, your expenses, all that stuff. Number 2, keep it simple. You know, don't over diversify. Concentrate on just a very few key investments and go deeper into understanding something versus trying to go wide. Number 3, don't trade. Invest for the long term. Just buy and hold on to it and stay patient. Number 4, before you do anything, invest heavily in learning. All this stuff takes immense amount of education. First, educate yourself. Follow the top 10% of futurists who know what they're doing. Follow them, learn from them religiously, and that'll be your way to financial freedom. And number 5, whatever you do, resist the urge to FOMO. Okay, be very cognizant. Is this this time where emotions are high? Everybody's, you know, is it euphoric time? Things are happening that are crazy. Usually that means you should probably be sitting on your hands and take it easy. So I hope that was helpful. If it was, please, if you're watching us on YouTube, give us a like. If you are listening to us on our podcast, please just leave us a review. And if you can share this episode with some another person, we really appreciate it. Neil, we have a pretty good next episode, which is 3 AI trends that I watch out for that are coming in 2025.
Great. And don't forget to subscribe if you're listening to the podcast. Subscribe so you get it every week.
Thank you. We'll see you in the next episode.
Thanks for listening to The Law Entrepreneur. If you found value in the show, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. And don't forget to share the episode with a friend. It could help transform their life. To get access to a treasure trove of exclusive free resources for lawyers, go to joinlawyerclub.com. Again, that's joinlawyerclub.com. We'll see you on the next episode.